Okay, she just turned it on. Now we're back.
Okay, we're back on the record. All right, so we're talking about the findings and purposes in the new bill which amends the Health Benefit Act. And so the question is there a motion for an amendment to this bill?
Okay, I move that we amend ONCA 17116, page 1, line 28, strike account and insert benefit.
Second. Oh, can I second as the chair?
No.
All right. All right, there's a motion and second made at page 1, line 28, to strike account and insert benefit. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
So to me on line 33, then when you say via the health accounts, you might say via health accounts.
Which one?
The SAF Nation will benefit from the assistance of a third party administrator to adjudicate eligible expenses via health accounts.
Well, there will be health accounts, only to be a family account or an individual account.
I heard you. I said that we should strike the word the.
Agreed.
Make a motion that we amend ONCA 17116, page 1, line 33. Strike the.
Before health.
Before health.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying yes. Yes.
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes. Is this still a non-ERISA plan? Tom Bartlett?
Yes.
Do we need to have any? Is this, there's still an uncoded car?
Yes.
Scroll down. Do you still have the mouse? Can you scroll down? Lower down.
Can you hear me the mouse?
No.
On D, when it says, you know, that you can access benefits via the use of an encoded card, and then it says all other eligible expenses. So should it say access some benefits? Because why, if you accessed it through the card, you wouldn't have to submit it through a claim form, which I think is confusing to people still. The card allows for certain things on the formulary, and that, will you explain how the card works?
Okay, the card is kind of hardwired as to IRS guidelines. So those merchants who operate and provide benefit to HRA or FSA cases, it's auto-adjudicated, meaning instantaneously the transaction is complete and it's verified as complete. There are those merchants who do not have that capability of having the encodement on the card, or choose not to because there is a service fee related to that. So for anything that would not be eligible, or would be eligible, but would not be acceptable to the merchant, there's going to be, have to be a cash outlay and then a reimbursement of those funds. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. So the idea is that all eligible expenses that cannot be incurred through the card must be submitted in claim form.
Correct.
And reimbursed.
Correct.
So to me, that's not really what that says right there. I just think we need to say it better.
Time. Well, since so they can access benefits via the card, everything else.
Well, it says that you desire to access the benefits, you can through the card. Then it says all other eligible expenses. Well, what does that that mean? Your expenses you can access through the card are eligible. It's just because the place that you're choosing to use it doesn't have the ability to process it. So, I mean, to me, we should say all eligible expenses which cannot be processed. At the point of purchase or whatever, what do you call it?
That's as good as language as any. I'm not a legislative expert, but that's operational to get.
But are eligible. Because this confuses quite a bit. So I would say all expenses which are otherwise eligible but cannot be processed at the point of purchase require the member to submit a claim form in order to initiate a reimbursement process. So it would read eligible Osage Nation members will be able to access benefits if desired via the use of an encoded card, maximizing the convenience to the beneficiary to the extent cost-efficient technology allows. All expenses which are otherwise eligible but cannot be processed at the point of purchase require the member to submit a claim form in order to initiate the reimbursement process.
So do you really feel like that language improves Section B? Assuming you do leave it.
Right.
I guess I'm trying to specify. To me, it says the same thing.
I think so,
to me,
too.
It's another way of saying the same thing. But again, how does it improve it? I mean, I want to support it, but I want to give it more time.
Well, especially in the non-operative part of the bill.
Right now, you say the way that you're going to know if the only way you're going to know if your card doesn't get taken somewhere, and this came up a lot at the beginning, did it not, Mr. Bartlett? They didn't understand that some pharmacies, you can't use your card at some pharmacies. So what are we supposed to do? Well, I don't know that to the extent cost-efficient technology allows, explains to them, some pharmacies just don't take the card. It may not be because it's cost-efficient technology. It may just be, that may not be the reason, or it may not work at some time. So I was trying to make it clear that if your point of purchase doesn't work, you go through the reimbursement process. You can go through the reimbursement process. Because as you know, everybody around here calls this the health card. But it's really not that, it's more than that. You can actually say, all your expenses, you could pay out all your expenses, and at the end of the year, you can have your pharmacy that you use do a printout for you, and you can send in that reimbursement form, and they'll pay you the entire amount right then and there. Very few people understand that, so I think we need to try to make this, as long as we're at it.
Andy, do you have her language?
I don't think she does.
No. You have it?
I do.
Okay, so moved.
Can't second.
Make a motion. Seconded by my colleague, Speaker Pratt. Do you have
any? Yeah. Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying yes.
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 Okay.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
And I suggest you just strike E because the purpose of the act doesn't provide the eligibility. The membership provides the eligibility.
Okay.
And I think you're repeating what you set up in A anyway.
Anybody have a motion to that effect?
Make a motion to ONCA 17-116, page 1, line 45, strike, and 46, strike E in its entirety.
Okay, somebody needs to, you guys are going to have to write this stuff down.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Mr. Speaker Pratt?
So I have a question on when the amendment in D, is there literature that helps them understand that better? Because, I mean, I see that it was put in the bill, but it's, I mean, it would serve them better that if the literature was more, it's not like we mail them the copy of the bill, I don't think, so. That would need to be a follow-up that would help them understand the reimbursement process.
Okay, should we scroll on down?
Okay, so did 3103 stayed? So go back. So the only thing I'm going to say here is this is going to get a little. Should we piecemeal this? Because 3103 is establishment. There shall be established a health benefit plan fund under the treasury of the Osage Nation, exclusively for the purpose of individual health and wellness assistance. Do you want to put that back in there so this bill, I don't care, at some point when this one's no good and you haven't yet codified your pocket part, you're now jumping from here, back to there. You cannot read this bill in its entirety. You have to jump back and forth.
I thought that Congress is moving toward electronic publishing of the code, so that wouldn't be an issue.
I hope so.
Me too.
But I've been sitting through the CA meetings.
Right. I think we talked about it at least a couple of times.
It's my favorite thing to complain about, because we have to actually use this.
I agree. But so that's why I said,
I don't know if that's your favorite.
Should we put 103? Somebody moved to put 3103.
Okay.
Let's go back up to the top. Does it say what's amended? Yeah, it does.
2, 4, 5, and 6.
So 2, 3, 4, 3103, 3105, 3106. That's everything.
Let's change a word or two in 103 and move on.
But it's everything but poor little 3103. So I move with, chair would entertain a motion to insert 3103 at line 16 and then insert 3103 into the bill.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? Okay, let me go back up and get that for Dana. Page 1, line 16. Insert
3103 after comma, after 3102 comma, or just section 3102 comma.
Okay, thank you, Dana. I'm sorry.
Ron can have it. Be tied, but he can have it, and I second it.
Thank you.
Yes, we can tie.
Okay.
Chair, I have some amendments. Mr. Burke, here. I appreciate you organized section by section. I wonder if you could maybe go to some areas that maybe get this input on, so whether the amendments are helpful or not.
Okay.
The first one I have had was in.
Do you
have
anything in 3104?
No.
You want to go down?
Go down. There it is. E.
That is
3104. It is something. I have an amendment here, so let me go ahead and make it. I make a motion to amend ONCA 17116, page 2, line 71, strike semicolon and insert up to $500 semicolon.
Was that your motion?
Yes.
Any discussion? So you're clarifying that it's not open-ended, it's 500, up to 500?
Up to 500.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying yes?
Yes. I'd like to make a motion to amend ONCA 17116, page 2, line 77. Strike type F and insert plans B and F.
So it was plan F and part B.
I'm sorry.
I thought it was plan F and part B.
Oh, it's part B. Okay. I withdraw and restate. Strike type F and insert plans.
Plan F.
Plan F and part B.
Second.
Discussion. Do you think it's clear from reading that?
I was going to say, read it again.
Okay. It will read an option for members of the Osage Nation 65 in order to receive Medicare supplemental coverage, plan F and part B.
So that's not my issue. My issue is, do you think it's clear that you get one or the other? You get two or three, but not both? Yes, it's an or. Well, it's an and until you select the
there's
or.
There's option. No, that's true.
I agree, and should be or.
Which one?
Strike 74 and.
Here?
And put or.
The second and.
Uh-huh. The second and, after semicolon.
Annual benefit, age 65, or.
No,
the
second and.
And. After the semicolon.
That one.
Okay, or. Okay. Well, where are we with our current motion?
We are withdrawing the state.
I did withdraw the state.
And withdraw again.
Okay, here we go.
You're going to include both.
I'll withdraw.
Okay.
I'd like to make a motion to amend 17116, page 2, line 74, strike after $1,000, semicolon, strike and.
Second.
And insert or.
And insert or.
And insert or.
Discussion.
74.
The purpose of that is to make it clear that you get one or the other, but not both.
Congressman Shaw, shouldn't it say the second and?
And insert.
Well, earlier I put the thousand, I'll put second and.
Okay.
So here it is. Again, page 2, line 74, strike the second and insert or.
There you go.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? All right, what else do you have?
Well, he didn't finish. The 70, line 77.
Okay, now I'd like to make a motion to amend 17116, line 77. Strike type F and insert plan F and part D.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying yes.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, I'd like to go down to page 3, line.
Participants must be 65 years of age. On July 1st of the year, benefits will be received to qualify for the 65 and over benefits. I don't think that's true.
I don't
true.
Think that's true either. I thought you could any time. And it was,
well, you said Jean, but it
well, she
Jean.
Did agree, but still.
But I think it, I thought that when you turn 65, you qualify. Are we now making it so, Tom? If
I think that's actually the way it says it now.
Well, we actually had made where you could get prorated benefits.
Right.
But I think the reason that's a headache, I'll ask Tom what he thinks. If it's March 1st and someone becomes 65, they've already got their $1,000 benefit used, but now they're eligible for the Medicare supplement.
So it flips when that calendar year.
They could potentially get both, I think, if they prorated.
But I thought that's how they were doing it. I thought when you turn 60, it didn't make any difference, when you turn 65 during the year, at the time you turned 65, you were eligible to opt out, your benefits were prorated, and then you were able to enroll. Maybe, is that right?
That's how I understand.
But isn't it simpler to administrate if there's a single point in time every year when you have new or old? Because prorating, I mean, doesn't that involve the calculation of date and time on the 1,000 and a corresponding calculation of date and time on whatever Plan F cost in that part of the country? I mean, are we running up our administration costs by doing that?
It's going to really have that much of an effect.
Which part do you mean? I do know that the literature that's printed out by the Medicare Supplement Administrator says all this, and they put out literature to people. I mean, if it's changing, they have got to know, and they'll have to reprint literature.
Could someone get $1,000 in the first 3 months of the year and then elect the Medicare supplement, or is that or language sufficient to where they're done?
They are doing it today.
Doing what?
An elder, when they turn 65 and they apply for Medicare, first of all, you got to have Part A and Part B to do this. So, and that happens the month you turn 65.
Okay.
So, you got to have Part A and Part B, and once that is done, they could have spent the entire year,
$500
or $1,500 if they would have
right.
3 years. And that's, you know, we didn't find that to be, you know, a tremendous amount of people. You don't have that many Osage Elders turning 65 currently.
So I'm okay with it.
So you're okay with leaving it or changing it?
I'm okay with leaving it.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Do you want to see?
No.
Okay, so from now on, anybody that turns 65, because they can sign up 3 months before they're 65 for the Medicare supplement, can no longer do that? That's what's being promoted here.
Well, yeah, that was changed.
Right.
Where if you turn 65 on March 1st, you get a prorated benefit. 65 for the rest of the year, so you don't have to wait until January 1st of the next year. Like if you're born on January 2nd,
right.
That's your birthday. Well, you've missed out the rest of the 364 days of the year, you have to wait until January 1st. So we thought that wasn't fair and allowed a prorated benefit if you turn 65 during the year, not just January 1st.
I think if you're probably a better or more likely example would be somebody in November whose their birthday was in November. I'm trying to figure out.
Maybe we should see what the old law said about it, because
I think we already addressed this
in the old law.
I think we did.
I agree.
I remember this being there.
Okay, so let's just put on our notes that we need to look at the old law for that.
We've got about 10 minutes left. I'm sorry.
All right, let's hit, you want to go back to letting Tom hit his
yes.
high points?
I've got one more high point I'd like to address while he's here, because I think it's the biggest one to discuss, and I really need to get feedback on this, because I had an amendment, I realized that it's not going to hit the mark. Let's just go to page 3, lines 119 to 120. Now, what I had planned to do at one time was to put an amendment here that said something about, I'm not making a motion, application must be admitted by tribal members for Osage Nation members under the age of 18 who shall be known as dependents. The health benefit plan balances for the tribal members submitting such application, plus the total of all dependents' balances shall be administered and distributed from one account known as a family account. That was my attempt at your family account. piece that's in there that's different is it only allows tribal members, that's in the plan document right now, only tribal members can apply for a dependence tribal benefit. Doesn't allow for the non-Osage custodial, whoever it is, grandparent, somebody else. No. They've been doing it because there was no other way, is my understanding, but can we allow for that?
Can we entertain also the idea that Osage would be adopted by two non-Indians somewhere? And how big of a hassle could that be? I'll just speak it plain. I'm not a fan for us standing in judgment on who is the appropriate parent, because I think we can all think of situations where the male is the Osage, but we would not want those children with that male or having to go through that male every time, and we can say the same thing about the female. I think if it's in the benefit of the children, then we put that in the custodial parent or parents, and we stay out of the business of identifying whether they're Osage or not.
Well, I think you have the same problem, don't you, with elders that are sometimes guardian, they have a guardian that's not.
Well, that's what I'm saying. There's a lot of situations where the grandparent's not Osage or Indian.
So it really
that
is.
Are, but that are but you're talking specifically about children here in this. I mean, if we're going to stay germane, number two is for children.
Correct.
Right.
But we're saying the grandparent is not Osage taking care of them.
Who can apply their balances? But see, that's too tight. It doesn't allow all these other situations. So to me, maybe when we open it in language, not specify who can apply, who can hold the account balances or administrate the account balances, and not having have to be a tribal member. But I will say that language about tribal member can apply is in the plan document right now.
I don't have a problem with changing that.
So, but I'm trying to figure out. I'm grasping at the fumbling around with the
right,
language.
Well, let's work on that. Let's put that down. We need.
Let
to
me make one more point before we leave here. I noticed when I was reading this, I don't think anybody else caught it. Number one uses may, number two says must. So that would seem to indicate that it's a mandate that every Osage member under the age of 18 have an application submitted for them. I don't think we want to make that mandatory. So whatever language we use probably should also use the word may. So we don't look like we're mandating.
Let's go before the next meeting. Let's try to do some cleanup like this. This is a good cleanup, and often in these very important bills, we do go line by line and work on these quite a bit. And it doesn't just take one session; it takes a while. One of the things I'm concerned from a policy standpoint, Dr. Shaw, do I understand that this bill only requires one application in your entire life? Is that right or not?
Right, and that language is in there. Somewhere in this section.
Well, it says shall
the mere part of initiate or restart?
Well, I'm going to go back to saying that, maybe I should just ask Tom the pros and cons of that, because I remember factually that we have had when we required applications to be submitted, the idea was that if you need this benefit, it's available to you. But if you don't need it, you don't have to use it. And so the idea was that during the course of a year, you can always apply during the course of a year, and you can also choose not to apply for that year. If you change it, then you are, in essence, saying we're going to make $500 available to everyone who's ever applied until such time as I guess we figure out that you have either changed tribes or you are deceased. And we have not done our calculations for the cost of that based on that scenario, that model. We have figured out, on average, how many people sign up, and then we've
no.
made... we've made our assessments based on that, Assistant Principal Chief, then.
But I'm back to the comment I made when we first started talking about projections. We certainly have not used that over here, how many are signed up for it. All we have used is how much is used. It's the use patterns and the actual expenses out of the fund that we have used every time, because that is actual use. Under that scenario, that's what we're doing. And under that scenario, someone who stops using the card because they got a better job, I don't want to use that, I want to leave that for other people, they just run up to 1500 and they just stay there. And they don't use it, period. So if there's not expenses coming out of it, those expenses are not being figured into our annual cost. What we're using to analyze cost is how much is going out the door and how many people are using it, so we can get an average amount per beneficiary. We believe those are the two operable moving parts of it, and that is the best interpreter, not how many people are in the plan.
But see, we did that differently. Over here, we saw how many people you were enrolled in the plan for a given year. And when we took that number, we said, of that, two-thirds of that number will come back the next year and utilize by enrollment the plan again. And then the second year, by number, that many people will enroll again the third year. Because if you don't enroll, then you're not entitled to the benefit. It doesn't roll over for you. So, am I saying this correctly?
You're saying it correctly.
So that was a whole different calculation from, if 10,000 people sign up and 8,000 use it, the next year 8,000 get that same benefit, and the next year 8,000 get that same benefit.
That's not it. It's how much they use it, how much they're actually using out of the plan that matters. Rollover affects that. Family size affects that. I mean, there's a lot of things affecting when you pool those family benefits, you're going to have a higher use. So for us, Congress can do it however they want. For us, it's use, actual use. That's what we're tracking.
So you don't think it changes if you give everyone that signs up ever the opportunity to get $500, that rollover for the next 2 years, you don't think that's a different calculation from if you have to sign up every year?
It's use. Oh. It's use because if what you say is true, your own position on this is if they find out that they should have and they didn't, I just signed back up. That's still use. That's not how many signed back up right then. Is anybody tracking how many people signed up and didn't sign up and then signed back up?
Yeah, we're trying to, but well, we kind of lost. We
haven't yet. I'm still focused on these.
Well, as you know, we lost some of that ability in HealthSmart. Yeah, this is just like the same scenario that we have with the higher ed scholarship. We're at the mercy of whatever is included in that document that the chief signs. So if the chief doesn't require any of this kind of reporting to the Congress, we're not able to do any of this kind of scenario. Dr. Shaw.
This in part came from some WageWorks recommendation that talked about perpetual funding.
Right.
And the second one is private for the most safe members. We've got a lot of language in about to interpret it and operate it to the best benefit of the Osage Nation members. Removing the requirement to sign up every year for people that are active users is a real flexible benefit for Osage Nation members. I know I've even spoken to my colleagues here in the Congress that it's really a disincentive to have to sign up every year because they're busy, they've got big families, it's hard to keep up with the re-signing up agreement. Then when you need it, your card's inactive because you've got to sign up.
Okay. I was one of those colleagues, and when we had that discussion initially, but I've put a lot more thought into it, and I'm tending to lean towards you should sign up again every year, especially. And what Raymond was just saying, he just said, like, oh, what if you don't use it? What if you get a better job? What do you say? You get a better job and you don't want to use it. Well, when you can sign up and then it just automatically goes, that's tying money up that wouldn't be tied up if you were having to reapply every year. So anyways, that's what I think about that, but we need to start wrapping this up.
Okay, Mr. Bartlett, can you just give us you get the last word, the pros and cons of that perpetual application process?
In my professional opinion, I would err to the side of annual enrollment, because you have to make sure of the status, the address. There are a lot of addresses that change. There are custodial parents that change. There are a lot of changes that go on during any given plan year. And I think what I represent is the responsible use of the assets. And if you're going to grant somebody a benefit, they have to have a responsibility for that benefit. And I don't think asking them to enroll every year is that great of a deterrent for them to achieve getting that benefit. So I would, and I don't like unfunded liabilities, I never have. I think your unfunded liabilities are going to appear higher from the way that you allocate funds rather than how the treasurer may allocate them. So, I mean, it's not six of one, half a dozen or the other, in my opinion. It's more like five of one and seven of the other. But you can do either one, either way. It can be functionally performed by the administrator, and that's really what I'm talking about. That's what I'm here to represent. So
I just had a question real quick. Has HealthSmart ever actually verified, because you know we talked about people who disenroll,
yes.
You actually verify with the membership department at that time that they're still
the Office current. Of Constituent Services, I believe, or something along those lines. I don't remember the name, the actual physical name, I guess. There was a release form.
That's probably changed too.
But they're still currently, okay, because you know if you relinquish your enrollment, you still keep that card, and so you could still use it. And that's,
right.
I know instances where that has specifically happened. So
I think it was 12 or 14 months ago, there was a decree issued by the Osage Nation where they rescinded the ability to achieve benefits by a number of people who were reportedly Osage. So we went back and functionally terminated those cards immediately on that release of information. So there are occasions where somebody's in good standing and then is not a good those things happen in the administration.
In close, we'll keep working right until we can. Can
right
you
now?
Tell us about the issue with keeping track of the funds that roll over, how that's being proposed to track under the new plan, and what are the issues that we're going to have when this transfers over?
Are we still on the record now?
Yes.
Okay. This is when my dyslexia kicks in. It is functionally being performed today on the rollover funds by the current administrator. That every claim that comes in is being processed on the basis of the current year benefit. And once that current year benefit is exhausted, they go back to process claims that are even incurred today against prior year benefit, preliminary, the most recent, and then the furthest most recent. They want to download that series of events. So that is, they're working from a first in, first out. This is where the dyslexia came.
Last in, first out.
That's right. I knew I'd get it.
I
had a 50-50. Last in, first out. That goes back to the procedural articles before when WageWorks said, unless you want the three buckets to be worked on the most. So,
First in, first out.
And that is going to be probably the biggest change that people don't need. It's invisible to 90% of their beneficiaries. They're very few people who are invisible to your plan. But there are those occasions where someone could be shortchanged as a result of that.
Is HealthSmart going to give those plan balances to WageWorks?
Yes, that's what I understand.
And does anybody have to sign anything over to have that occur? So maybe that's part of the deal between the nation, maybe. But if you've got those benefits being administered through HealthSmart, you will have a transition, will you get a balance that shows you what you have? Because some, the question was, I called to try to get a balance before and couldn't really get it. Or do you know?
You're asking me to anticipate the future with the current, with the new administrators you can call?
No, do you know how, do you know if the plan is to transfer those balance numbers over to wages?
Plan is to transfer those balances.
And then is the member going to get some sort of?
Notification?
Right.
I don't believe so. Balances will be available, but there won't be a proactive notification.
All right, when's the next meeting for this set?
Kind of except Wednesday.
This Wednesday?
I would set it for tomorrow, except that Wade Woods will not be here. They want to, they prefer to have questions posed and they can research and provide answers.
Well, I appreciate that that's what they want.
I'm happy to set.
But I would like, we can go on Wednesday, but I would appreciate you asking the people that are going to be administering our benefit to come and talk to the Osage Nation Congress in person. We've always had health benefit representatives. Well, then maybe they, then you're really not trying to get this out, are you? I think I asked you then, you said no.
No, I said not necessarily.
Okay.
Sold on it, but on the other hand, I wouldn't say, well, I might get it out because they wouldn't have their person.
Well, they won't even talk to us on the telephone.
When do you want them on the phone?
Why can't they come in person to talk to us?
Interaction in person.
Because I think that you get so much more out of a conversation that we're having like this. I mean, they're asking me to go spend my time writing up questions for them when if they were sitting here, my stream of
consciousness. I'll set a meeting for
Wednesday. Okay. All right. What time? Okay.
Make a motion to postpone OSCA 7116 with a call of the chair.
Okay. All those in favor signify by saying yes?
Yes.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying yes?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second.
As soon as Dana turns it off, I'll
I don't know.
You never know when we're on and off the record here.
That's what I want to make sure of. Because I don't think.